Rodgers and Damon Benning.
Overshoots everyone. Scooped up by Roberts, and that'll do it. The Knights have slain the Dragon for the second time in NCAA tournament history. A 16 has beaten a 1, and the FDU Knights are that 16, knocking off number 1 in the East, Purdue, 63-58.
Gonzaga.
By Miami down the stretch. Final seconds come off the clock. How sweet it is for Miami as the Hurricanes have knocked off Indiana and they are marching on to Kansas City.
And Creighton has done it. Punches. It's Sweet 16 ticket for the second time in 3 years.
A wild weekend in sports all across the board, but of course it was all centered around March Madness, the round of 64 and the round of 32. It's Coffee and Cream in the Morning on Hail Varsity Radio, powered by Currency, alongside my guy, Damon Benning, who likes to use what term on a Monday?
No manic stuff with us. No manic stuff. We'll keep it 100. A lot of crying this weekend. No pun intended.
A lot of glasses ripping.
Hey, man, I was cool with that.
I had to fit it in already.
I was cool with that. But I'm sure we'll get to it at some point. Listen, it's so weird for people to be so animate about a particular reaction or response to something. And they probably can't really relate. So what I would kind of suggest, and it's just me, man, so you can tell me to go fly a kite. But if you lack perspective, just say things like "in my opinion" or "what you would do." I wouldn't get in the habit of judging people if you've never been there, right? Like, I always love when people tell me what they would have done, or they judge what would have been done, and they have no idea what it's even like to be in that situation. So just keep it 100. Just be like, hey, you know what? Like, I don't know what I would do, or this is what I think I would do, or I could see blank. But don't judge the actual person for what they did.
I mean, I'll tell you, DB.
You're like Judgy McJudge.
That was kind of the extreme. I mean, put yourself in her shoes.
You're talking about Lee's mom.
Lee's mom, right? Put yourself in her shoes in that moment, okay? Yeah. You don't wear glasses. I don't wear glasses. What is your reaction if you were in that moment? What are you ripping up?
I don't know, but probably... And I'm not...
You're ripping off your shirt like Musselman?
I don't know. Maybe he's odd duck boy, isn't he? I don't know. You know what I mean? But
I mean, I could see pacing, you know, really getting animated with yourself, like a little ticked off, you know, people coming over trying to, you know,
I think people handle it. Like, when Bellevue West was wearing West Side out, it was about 19-4 or something like that. And I could just tell, you know, West Side wouldn't die for a loose ball. Bellevue West is getting all the 50-50 balls. Like, there were just things that were aggravating me that I was like, oh, here we go again with the bull, right? Like, we're going
to get the horns.
Yeah, you know, like, oh, I've just seen it, right, with, you know, the low floor and the high ceiling. I'm like, oh, okay, one of those days. So, you know, he missed like 17 two-footers in about 4 minutes. So at that particular moment, especially as I'm watching the game go on, right, and I'm how can I say this? I wasn't always enamored with the effort versus the score. And at one point, are we in this tree of trust?
We are in the tree of trust.
At one point, I feel like I'm getting ready to talk about the waitress.
Because it is spring.
I feel like we're getting ready to talk about the waitress at Applebee's. at one point, Coach Lumanji kind of grabbed my arm, like just subtly. Like, I don't think he knew it, but he's like, get him out of the game. And it dawned, and I think it turns out he was talking about Caleb. And I don't think he wanted him to get hurt because they were getting blown out, but he was flying all over the place. And I remember at one point, I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm kind of proud. This is the duality of a parent, and I'm just being 100% honest. I was proud that he only knows to play one way, but I was mad that he was putting himself in harm's way when I didn't feel like he was getting a group effort, right? So I had to reconcile that in my head.
Got to remember these conversations.
I was going, coach, dad. I'm like, coach in me, like, hey, sometimes you just
play
lay
your best
an
player,
egg.
Right?
You lay an egg, right? Some guys just don't have it. But I couldn't reconcile effort in my head.
Right? Dad, hey, I want you to play.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep you in the game.
I mean, he got this ridiculous block. They're down 30. He gets this ridiculous block late. He flies into the basketball deal. And I'm like, you know what? Okay. Like, let her rip. But I was fuming inside. Got up. Maya's sitting right next to me. She's got like three of her friends. No, her one buddy had left. So it was just her and Megan. And I didn't say one word. Not one. And I got up. Because I just made a beeline for the door. We got to the bottom of the escalator, and I was like, hey, you know, sorry for not talking. I was just in a zone. Now, if I would have had something in, like I banged the arm of my chair, right?
Which is a common reaction.
So I'm just like, and I know every, I know, I know that
and
there are a lot
of water bottle. People would be like, whoa, I'm going to step out of his way. Like, that's what they did when she's crumpling up her glasses.
But listen, though, do you know,
spiked them like,
I just didn't feel good judging her because I don't know what I would have done in a situation of that magnitude.
Yeah. I don't know if I judged. I think I just reacted.
Right. I mean,
but maybe the reaction led to judgment.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have any problems with it. What I didn't like is, you know, the referring to her as like a bad sport or out of pocket. I'm like, and I remember being in, I think it was Cleveland.
It's easy to jump on a winner's mom.
That environment in wrestling in nationals is, it's unlike any, it's
crazy.
I don't know any other environments like that. And I've said this
and
too.
It's quick.
And I said, you know, and it just sucks that they're the example, but it was electric. Like, going to Carver to watch wrestling is the single greatest on-campus environment that they have, and that includes football. I don't have any problem saying that. I mean, it's electric in there. And who knows what Lee's really been through, right? The ACLs, the knees. I mean, he's older. People were making fun of that.
He's like, a champ.
I'm like, are you guys serious?
People like rooting against the champ, though. Like, especially if you have no ties to the team or to the player or to the sport, even. If you can react to the champ going down and then you see, like, some added fuel coming with it
Now, the one thing I was okay with is when folks were just honest. Like, it was, hey, man, Iowa fan has no problem piling on us when we lose one score games, man. No sympathy from me. Like, I'm cool. Hey, I'm cool. I may dap you up, but at least say that's what it is. You know what I mean? Because that's human. Like,
yeah.
That's just, hey, man, you get at me all the time. Chirp, 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 chirp. Now finally I clap back and you're mad. Like, I would have to check myself. I was like, I guess they seem kind of hypocritical. But I just didn't, like, that doesn't make her a bad sport, though, is what I'm saying.
No. But it's great for the sports world to be able to react to.
Because you know the first thing I thought of? I thought something was wrong with him and she just was like hoping for the best. Now the fourth, it didn't
get wrapped up like a pretzel.
Dude, that was, your body's not even supposed to move like that. And then for Ramos to get beat by Glory, like, it was kind of weird, but that's just wrestling, right?
Right.
And all
the glory.
I didn't love the medical forfeit from an optic standpoint, but remember, I don't use I think people only use optics when you don't know enough about the situation.
Didn't Nebraska use a couple of medical forfeits too?
Yeah, but and the thing about it is he wears Cronin out. I don't know if he didn't like, oh man, I don't know if I could win.
Yeah, it wasn't that.
I don't think so either.
But then people thought about, hey, because he wasn't competing for the title, he's just quitting.
Yeah.
And then people latched onto that story.
And I wasn't going there. I told my buddy.
But people were there.
I told my buddy Aaron, and he's like, he's a wrestling junkie. I mean, he was watching the Seeds on Friday night for the pairings, and you know, even in like just regular duels throughout the year, you know, the season, he'll ask me. I screenshotted my library. I was like, yeah, man, I got the NCAA wrestling library. Like, he's that dude. He'll pick winners and losers in the bracket. And I told him on Sunday or whatever day it was, Saturday, I get how people may look at that. I said, just a tough call for a guy that's been through so much. I don't feel good, you know.
This guy's going to be an Olympian.
Dude, he's unbelievable.
He's going to win gold medals.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact I like him. But it's because of what he's been through. And then
he's like an overcomer.
To boot, Coach Chubbuck Jr. just going, he wasn't going bonkers. He wasn't very happy on Twitter because people were responding to a coach in a locker room after his team just beats the one seed that says, hey, the more I watch Purdue, the more I thought we could beat him. What's he supposed to say? And that's probably what he thought.
Hey, guys, we just made it. We made it to the round of 64. We're not going to win.
Hey.
But we're going
to
be there.
Do you know what coaches say to their players? I got one coach, and he's a buddy, who said after we beat them, he goes, hey, and emotions are running high. He goes, hey, that kind of surprised me. I told our guys all week, I didn't think you guys were very good up front. You know, I felt like you guys were a little overrated. Okay. Like, I get it. That happens all the time.
And I'll tell you this.
And he just kept it 100. I didn't bat an eye at it. We probably laughed and said, we talked about something else right away. Like, I didn't say, hey, wait a minute, man.
You didn't get defensive.
You didn't think our offensive line was very good? You didn't think we were very physical? No, man, because I know what said to talk to your team. Hey, we're going to go at that guy.
And it was kind of like,
hey,
when we're
looking at the brackets,
hey, I'm impressed with you.
I don't know. I think he was just being real.
Well, he was like, hey, you know, I didn't believe this, but when I saw it, I'm like, oh, I was wrong. Yeah. So he basically took a shot and then took a shot at himself right afterward.
Yeah,
the bullet ricocheted.
Do you know how many times like I've been like, hey, if we get them, that's who I want to play. Because, you know what I mean? Like, coaches do that. And as a player, you want guys, you want a coach that believes in you. And he was just going round and round on Twitter. Like, you're actually mad that he thought that he told his team that they could beat Purdue? Come on, man. Like,
I will say, when I heard that, I'm like, yeah, okay. And then
you didn't think so?
Well, no. So I didn't feel like they matched up well size-wise down low.
Yeah, but we didn't like that backcourt to begin with.
But yeah, but I didn't think, hey, you know, just because I thought Edie would at least get one.
Yeah.
Just because he's so dominant on the inside and just his sheer size was, I mean, he was just picking things off the glass after every miss by Purdue. But I didn't take into account that, you know, Fairleigh Dickinson can play. Dimitri Roberts,
yeah,
he's tough.
He's tough. Caleb kept telling me that they were going to win last night against FAU, and he goes, I don't know, maybe not win, but because I was like, golly, this is going to be a drubbing. He's like, nah, if they do, they'll pull away late. And, I mean,
kind of how it happened.
Yeah. I wanted to mess with him. He went to bed early just because he needs a certain amount of sleep, but he swears he's growing. So he's going, you know, he's like, hey, man, I remember Cluster. He told me Keegan started growing when he started going to bed at night. Remember how much he grew over his junior and senior year?
You're like, hey, man, most of that's genetics.
No. Well, Cluster's not a big guy. Keegan's the tallest one of the bunch. No, actually, CJ is. But so I didn't get a chance to tell him, you're right. But we watched so much about, you know, he'd say, hey, that's good action. Or, man, you can't drop. You can't have a guy ice a ball screen and then have the guy drop in coverage. You're funneling him to nobody. Or just the little back and forth that we were having just about temperament. And, you know, he knows full well why I say, and this has been drilled into him, why I hate the line, they've got nothing to lose. People say it real freely, but if you compete, you're not buying any bit of that. No matter how much David and Goliath it is, at some point, you get to a point as a competitor, you're like, nothing to lose. I can lose this match. Because do you think a guy says to himself or a gal, well, I'm not supposed to win anyway. I'm not spending any time around you. I don't care how true you think that is. Like,
yeah, because even I was just thinking here.
You talk about speaking things into existence. What did that's all Ramos kept talking about after the match against Lee. It's all he talked about.
He's like, I knew.
I saved that interview. Listen, if I'm having a bad day or I can't get my ass in gear and I'm not feeling good about life.
Watch it back.
Hey, speaking into existence, because that's all I ever talk about.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about that.
He's like, listen, I knew I had a chance. I knew I could compete, right? Speaking into existence, and I'm like, that's another one of those simple versus easy things. Treat people like you want to be treated. Sounds pretty simple, right? Real simple. Not real easy to execute for some folks.
And this conversation didn't make sense for, hey, you have nothing to lose. There are some conversations that makes sense. It doesn't mean that you have to believe it, but it makes sense. For example, when the Houston Texans won in Week 17 and then they lost the first overall pick. But then it had me thinking, well, I guess you have – could lose your job.
What did the head coach say? He said, "You want me to tell my team to not compete?"
Smith was playing for the Bears there.
Do you want me to not? You want me to tell my team to not win? No, we're trying to win.
I'm with you. I'm completely there. However, for the franchise, I'm okay. Okay with saying that and not pulling it off.
We can't be friends.
I'm okay with saying that and not pulling it off. I benefited from it.
We can't be friends so if you're good. Acting like that.
I'm good, man. We benefited.
We benefited. I like that.
But hey, I was going to add one more thing.
We're in that judgment-free zone, man.
I was in that, you know, we talked about Lee's Madre. We talked FDU against FAU. How about on the ladder and talking FAU and what they did at the end of that game. Time winding down, up 8. What was it, a 360 dunk attempt that went off the back iron? That team, here's the reaction, right? That team either went from your Cinderella run team to the most hated team in the tournament, or you love that they play with a little bit of this bad boy mentality and you're going to latch onto them. What side of the boat do you sit on? I lean to the side of, come on, man. Like, let's have some class. Like, I know you haven't been here all too much, but we don't do this here.
Yeah, I kind of – I hate to say it, man, because I've been the in-the-real-emotion guy all morning, whatever's real. But I'm kind of with you. That's a little over the top.
Yeah, I'm just and Coach addressed it, right? Right away. They met at center court, and they're like, hey – I'm going to make sure that this is the first thing I talk about with my team when we go back into the locker room. But you can't be doing that. You can't be reacting like that. I know it's exciting. I know you just moved on to the Sweet 16. You beat a 16 seed to go to the Sweet 16.
It's exciting.
Stop acting like you're Alabama in these moments.
Yeah. I just don't – I'm not a big fan, especially of – especially of criticizing parents.
It's because you are one.
No. Well, yes. But the reverence I have for, like, you know, my mom making sure I had, like, I'm going to try not to get emotional here, but, you know, like, my mom making meals, having stuff on the go, you know, my dad driving, getting me to and from practice. I just have a level of appreciation for when people lay it on the line, right? And I mean, she can get another pair of glasses. Like, I just, you don't know what they've been through. To in the moment be like, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Again,
if you're just telling me you're being petty because it's Iowa, okay. At least you're honest. It probably says more about you than her, but at least you're honest, right? I just didn't. And then Chubba got me all gassed up because I was in complete agreement with him too. Like, you're mad at FDU's coach
for telling his team to have some type of belief.
Yeah. I'm telling you guys, I said, the more I watched them, the more we –
week that Purdue was the one seed to beat, one that could lose.
Let me give you one the other way. We're traveling to North Platte. Do you know how many times our staff said to the team and to one another, hey, listen, this is a bad matchup for us if we don't do this, this, and this. This is a bad matchup for where we're at right now health-wise. Oh, and it happened. So did we speak it into existence? Maybe. But what, you know what we call it? Just being honest. Mm-hmm. You know, and
did you address that with your team?
And I remember before we got on that bus, on the bus, and Coach Samanji was like, listen, I tried to tell you guys their level of physicality. Like, all the things that we were talking about all week. And then what did he say? Hey, listen, we own it. Because if we knew it and we didn't get you guys ready, that's on us. And that's, of course, the famous come to Jesus meeting night that we had that went to the wee hours. But so it goes both ways. I just think coaches have the right to be honest with their players. And I think parents can be honest with their kids. I don't know. That's just me. I was shocked.
I can vibe with that. Let's go to line one. Let's talk to Brett here before we go to a break. Brett, good morning. You're on Coffee and Cream.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's up, buddy?
Before I get to my comment, I wanted to say, DB, a couple weeks ago when I called in, you gave a shout-out to my son, and like that made like his week. So thanks for doing that.
The odds? I'm talking North Platte and you're on the phone.
Good transition.
That's actually pretty funny. So what's hilarious too is that the kiddo is going to made the Battle 7-on-7 championships in April. So
nice.
Playing on a team in Texas, 12U team, and
congrats to him.
Managing baseball. Yeah, it's pretty fun. But so this is a minority, I know, in comments, but I'm actually perfectly okay with Spencer Lee's mom's reaction.
Me too.
Because I feel like what's lost in a lot of youth sports is teaching our kids just the ability to compete and enjoy the process. And I think for me, like, watching her reaction is she's just a competitor herself. And her reaction to that is perfectly normal to me. Same with Musselman. You know, like, his sheer thing. And when you see those teams play, they just compete. But when you watch youth sports a lot today with parents' reactions, it's more about them than the kid. And I didn't see that hurt. And so I'm perfectly fine with it. And I know I'm in the minority, but I think it's perfectly okay. We need to get back to teaching our kids the ability just to compete and enjoy the process. And if you don't emulate that as a parent in a healthy way, I don't think the kids are they're not going to find it.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Brett, we appreciate the call. Thanks so much. Michigan Lance, stick around. We will get to you next. More Coffee and Cream next.
Coffee and Cream with Rogers and Benning on Hale Varsity Radio.
Got a couple of segments before we head into, and we're going to dive head first right into the presser with Coach Rule.
8 o'clock.
Following day one of spring practice, as DB said, right at 8 o'clock. Right before we do that, we will give some spring storylines that are kind of on the noggin, and then we'll react to the presser, too, at 8:30. There was a decent article about the NIL written on the Omaha World Herald last night that kind of gave some clarity into that, which I'm interested to get your thoughts on two particular things in that article, being a former player. So if we have time, because things are so loaded, we'll try to get into that around 8:45. We'll talk to Zach. Is it Pirellis?
Yeah. Right, Shane?
I'm not sure. Probably. But I'll ask him. He's a new guy, so we'll break him in today here.
Not sure, probably.
I can do sometimes is shake my head. You know, we were talking about emotions, and my guy T-Mac, he said, people need to mind their own business. She broke her glasses. They were hers to break. All weekend, I watched coaches have temper tantrums for bad calls, break clipboards, and jump on the court to complain to referees. See, that's what I'm saying. real time in the moment. How many of us want to be on camera?
It's different because it's all about perspective, right? We give coaches a lot of grace for their reactions.
But not parents, because they love harder than coaches?
But it's just different, right? Because coaches, when they break clipboards, it's such commonplace sometimes when they're ticked off to, like, do something kind of outlandish. I mean, staring down a referee, we made fun of that, right? So because it was different. So, like, you don't often see a cutaway to a parent that's ripping off their glasses. You see a lot of times where you're breaking a clipboard. But it all comes back to kind of what Brett was saying going into the break. And if you missed it, he was essentially saying that he didn't have an issue with it. It's all about, you know, being a competitor, right? The parent can be just as much of a competitor for their kid as much as the kid can compete for the school.
And what makes somebody a bad sport? Not liking to lose? Should I be cool with losing?
It all comes back to upbringing, though, right? Lee's mom probably had some models in her life that were that
intense
type of competitor.
He's not like that.
Right.
If his parents aren't like that.
Right. For me, it's different because my parents said, keep your head down. So I told you, if I was reacting in that moment, my head would be down. I'd do similar thing, make a beeline to the door. Maybe I'd, like, you know, hit the arm of the chair, whatever, and just walk out. But that wouldn't get talked about because that is commonplace. Yeah. So I'm going back to what I'm saying about the coaches here. If it's kind of the norm, it gets overlooked. And back, did you say it was T-Mac?
Yeah.
Going back to what he was saying, and I'm trying to catch it. What did he say at the very beginning of that?
People need to mind their own business.
People need to mind their own business. Unfortunately, we live in a world
where
you don't mind your business.
But just because we can doesn't mean we should.
Exactly.
Right? Because we have the autonomy to judge doesn't mean we should. Right? And you're so right about how you were parented. I told the story one other time. My dad dragging me to Tabor, Iowa, to pitch when I felt like I had no business pitching in Tabor, Iowa as a 13-year-old or 12-year-old. Flew the whole nine. Mom didn't want me to go. I laid in the back seat on my way there. Threw a no-hitter, and I hit four batters, right? Like, just – I mean, I was –
Threw a no-hitter, that's pretty sick.
Yeah, but I didn't have it, though, right? Like, it was a grind. He came out to talk to me twice. I remember getting shelled at the Y. We were playing at the Y. Couldn't find the strike zone, and this team, Vobeda and these guys, were just lighting me up. This guy, Scott Fullerton, I'll never forget, right? Just hitting just P-rockets. I'm in the fifth grade, and I'm looking for help. Right, I want Morford or, you know, Kasleka. Some of these guys, come on, man, get me out of here. Nah, you know, you're gonna get lit up. Okay, told you, about getting in the right frame of mind. So what happens? You know, I break my nose in an arena game, playing in an arena game. Had no idea that it was really broken, just knew. And I lost my front tooth, whatever. And didn't feel good, right? Didn't feel good after, didn't feel good for about a week. Pretty sick, missed a couple days of work. And just pushed through it, because that's what I was raised to do, right? So short story long, I had a deviated septum and I had an abscess that started to move its way up. It was supposed to be outpatient surgery over July 4th. I was in the hospital for 3 days and was tested for meningitis because they thought it was going to my brain because I'm hard-headed, right? So what don't I do? I don't go to the doctor when I should. I don't. So what do I say?
Stubborn.
What do I say to Caleb or Maya? Oh, man, push through it. Oh, man, it's just a cold. Because that's the way that
you're
I was.
Upbringing.
Even if it's to my detriment, and I should know better. I should know better. It's embarrassing, right? I just said to Caleb last night, man, fudge.
Well, you don't want anything to be wrong.
You just came off an antibiotic, man. What's wrong with you? Like, that's how I said it. And calmly, he says, it makes me feel about 85% better. I'm like, shoot, man. Okay, we'll get you back and see if we can get that drained. Right? Like, I should know better. So that's why I'm kind of an empath for when I see parents.
Yeah, moments like that.
Because it's in the moment. Mm-hmm. It's in the moment.
Let's go to line two. Michigan Lance holding. Thanks for holding through the break. What's up, Lance? How you doing?
Michigan Lance. Good morning, boys. How you doing today?
Oh, we're good. It's spring.
I'm fired up. What's up?
Kind of.
I'm mad I missed practice.
It's spring?
Hey, well, it's spring practice is what I was referring to.
Okay. I thought you were talking about the weather.
Oh, I wish.
Well, what? Tomorrow, though, it's official, right? Isn't spring March 21st or 22nd?
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, not in Omaha.
Whatever. Floridian transplant.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, like you care.
I'm just saying, man. Hey, I'm only a year removed from what I left. I remember that.
Yeah. What's up?
Hey, man, you guys had a great first segment, man. Y'all can go all day on those topics. A couple things. So the first one was the DB, like, yeah, how do you work with that as the father/coach? Did you go over and say, take your son out the game?
No, because I can't even believe I said that first segment. But that's just what I was thinking, right?
Right. No, I'm with you. Let's not get it.
And I was
I definitely get it.
And Coach Lamangi looked at me, and he's like, get him out. And I was just – and all of a sudden I started thinking, I was like, man, if – you know, something happens in a game where they're getting beat by 25. I'd have been pissed, right?
And I said
honestly,
I understand it from your point of view.
And I said honestly,
I understand it from Lamonji's point of view. Like, I don't understand why the coach didn't like. Hey, you know what?
No,
we're down by this many. Let me get my starters out.
Because Coach Simons,
or do you want them to know what it feels like? I guess.
Yeah, and in the same vein, he's competitive too. So I'm not judging him.
Does it come back to it? Nothing to
play with? And I'm not either.
I'm not judging him in that moment because who knows? Like, sometimes I'm like, yeah, man, we just have to take this on the chin, right?
Right, right. But know what it feels like.
But I was kind of being a baby because he played 16 minutes in the first half. He didn't come out. So
right.
I'm like, okay, like – time to get ready for football. Right? That's what I was thinking.
Right. I get it. And it's not being a baby. It's you're not thinking from a dad's perspective. You're thinking from a coach's perspective. Because we've been there as coaches where you're like, okay, all right, is this good? Is it not? Like, you just got to get a feel like, you know what? Hey, we need, you know what I'm saying? It goes either way. And then you got to figure it out in the moment. Yeah. So, and I'm not judging your guy either, anything like that. But man, college basketball—it's
wild.
You know, is it though? I mean, based on what we've seen this season, is it wild? Like, I've told you weeks ago about how college basketball really isn't that good.
Yeah, but Kansas has 19 quad one wins, right? Like, that's a surprise. That's a surprise.
Yeah, but hasn't that been Kansas too, though? Like, I know self, like, it's like, okay, expectations, right? When we expect Kansas to do well, they don't do well. But when we don't, they win a national championship. Same thing with Michigan State. We expect them to be in the Final Four. They get bounced how many every year in the first round. And then we forget about Michigan State. Now they're back in the Sweet 16.
How crazy
is it? And now Izzo's a good coach again.
No, listen, for 5 weeks, I even said it last week to Mike DeCourcy. I said, doesn't it seem like Michigan State is the one team that has another gear?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it that time, though, DB?
Yeah.
I mean, we forgot about Izzo, and then all of a sudden he bounces back.
Yeah, I don't know if we forgot about him. We just kind of said, like, I don't really want to play Tom Izzo.
Hey, give Miami's coach some props,
yeah,
man.
Larnaga, fantastic.
Yeah, man. He needs to be counted as one of those really good coaches now that Boeheim and Krzyzewski and those guys are gone. Hey, man, he needs to move up, man. That dude, I mean, Miami basketball is better than Miami football, and it's been like that for several years now.
Yeah,
like, out on them this year.
Great call. I told you that was the good team in the ACC, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Coming back, a few more hoops and a little spring preview quickly on Coffee
good
and
call.
Cream.
Coffee and Cream with Rogers and Benning on Hail Varsity Radio.
I'd like to remind everybody, too, I know we touched on what is to come, which, you know, at 8 o'clock right here on Coffee and Cream, we will be streaming the presser for you to listen to, so make sure to stay with us, 590 ESPN Omaha, or live on Twitter, live on YouTube. We appreciate you staying with us throughout this long journey of 7 to 10. It's only a 3-hour journey, but, you know, sometimes that can be pretty long, although it feels like it goes pretty fast for DB and myself. We'll have the sports cleanup at 9:30, so if we missed anything, we'll get to it there. I know Brett in our comments on YouTube was asking for some WBC talk. We'll definitely do that in the sports cleanup because Team USA is in the finals, and yes, we did not forget about that, but there's just been a lot that happened, precursing that event here locally. And to close the show, we'll talk to Brady Oltmans, too, about day one of Nebraska football. But let's get back into hoops before we get into these spring storylines. My last thing here before we move forward is, whose path are you taking? Like, out of all things, because Creighton's in a good spot right now.
They're in a great spot.
They have Princeton, which is kind of this year's St. Peter's, which now it had me thinking, who's Doug Eater this year? Is that Drew Timmy just because
although I will say this about Princeton, as a guy that watched three games in the Ivy League championship, Princeton is way more athletic than you think. And I was surprised to see the number at 10. Creighton Princeton is the biggest spread. So I think it's
more than 7?
It's 10.
Wow.
It's a little high. And Princeton can shoot. But they'll have almost no answers for Kolk unless they touch him. They have to get him early. Otherwise, you don't get him. Because I've been talking about this with Jacob and Ravi. You know what we underappreciate about Kalkbrenner right now? His ability to go get balls in the air without his feet on the ground. We act like because he's 6'11", oh, man, just go get it, big fella. No. Like, some of those catches and his willingness to go get it are super
chasing down rebounds too.
Underappreciated. The one that he had on the lob where he hit the floater on the way down, like his deft.
That was nuts.
Unbelievable.
That was nuts.
And it's like, oh, no big deal. He's a tall guy. I'm like, hey, man.
Watch your head.
That was silly. I just, you know, he challenged the one that got blocked. Like, he's going to get the basketball. A lot of those big guys, they don't like to leave the ground. They just don't. They're not used to it. They're already up there. I like the way he's playing, and all of the sudden, look at his field goal attempts per game. Like the Jeffersons, just moving on up. You know? And they're on the east side. By the way, only a 10-hour drive to Louisville. Oh, man. Go get it. Was where DB was right?
Patino to St. John's.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
I didn't know where you were going.
I forgot about that. Yeah. And then later on this week when Georgetown announces Cooley, give me a high five.
I'll start with a fist bump. I'll start there.
I'm telling you, UCLA.
Yeah.
If you reseed them, UCLA should be the overall, the second number one. Can I make that case?
You could, but they're also a team for me.
Uh-oh.
When I talk Miami here, they're that team that comes in with great expectation.
Not, I told not you like they Pip were good.
Charles Dickens, I said, great listen, expectation.
They were second in the ACC. Mm-hmm. I know the ACC was trash, but I've seen those guys hum.
And I slept on Miami. And I'm not saying I slept on UCLA because I was on them at the start of the year. But what they've been able to put together, I've actually been more impressed with their overall team chemistry than I thought they were going to be at this point in the season. Everything has kind of worked. They know what to do. It's so fluid. All of their movements kind of go in unison. They are a team that could be a one seed. I don't know if I'd make them the two.
I'll tell you, I would, Uncle Ruru was right.
I would probably put them above Purdue.
Because I thumbed, well, they're out, so you don't have to reseed them.
Yeah, exactly.
Where I thumb my nose at you, and he's getting some help, too. I'm surprised you're not beating your chest over Houston.
Yeah, Sasser is doing some work.
And he's got some help.
And he's got a lot of help. Well, and I thought that I'm a big storyline guy, so you know what the final four being in Houston.
Houston looks good, and I was kind of out on them. Now, I have Texas in my final four. You play by 61% of my picks?
That's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
That's crazy. With how widespread this field was this year, and you know the upsets that you thought were going to happen didn't happen, like the VCUs, like the Charlestons, and then
59%.
The uncertainty followed.
But I'm like, okay. I thought you were going to lobby to make Houston the overall two.
Well, that's what I would say.
Okay, so you'd go Bama.
I'd go Bama for sure.
Then Houston.
And then I'd go UCLA.
I probably wouldn't fight you over that. I would, okay.
Or, based on how Texas is playing.
Well, I have them in the Final Four, so I'm cool.
But Xavier's also playing some dang good basketball right now.
So, I'm a little, so my original Final Four was, how do I read this thing? Was so
with Spencer Lee's mom's glasses.
So this is what I'm cheering for, quietly. Because let's go back to the sports six-pack the week you missed. Do you remember the teams that I paired with each other? Get this. I said, would you take Texas and UConn or UCLA and Creighton?
Whoa.
All four in the Sweet 16.
I would take Texas and UConn.
Right now?
Right now.
So that was before the tournament started. Can you? That's going to be nip-tuck. Mm-hmm. Really? Because Creighton's path is pretty sweet.
And are you just talking like to get to the finals? Like if
no,
they were
so the original sports six-pack question was combined wins or rounds, who would you take, this pair or this pair? That was before. That was two weeks before the tournament started.
Yeah. And I think I'm still comfortable where I'm at.
I took UCLA and Creighton. And remember, John Fanta took UCLA and Creighton, but he said it was primarily on the strength of UCLA. Texas and UConn, now it hurts that they're down there kind of together, but it's going to be tough.
It's going to be nip-tuck. Hey, let's change gears real fast. We can get more into college basketball later on in the show, but let's get to some spring storylines before we hear from Coach Rule after day one of spring practice. This is technically my first spring, DB. It's not to say that I haven't been aware of spring football at the collegiate level, but this is my first covering it from head to toe. So I'm kind of a beginner. I'll admit to my amateurism here. But for you, you've been doing this forever.
Yeah.
So you kind of know what to eyeball. What are you looking at spring-wise as kind of your top storylines?
So there's always those few guys that have big springs, and we wonder, will it translate? Okay, so that's going to be a thing. We're going to rally. Plus, the reason why that's even more so this year is because it's a new staff. Mm-hmm. So a new set of eyes. So the fans probably think they know more about a lot of the players than the actual coaches do, right? I mean, they're still using Carolina and Baylor cut-ups to watch practice. I mean, that's going to suck, but they'll be doing that for a while, right, until they get more stuff on film with pads on. So I'll give you a handful of guys that I think could be spring stories. One of them is Bullock, John Bullock.
You've liked him for about a month now.
Yeah, well, keep an eye on Bullock, and maybe I'm speaking it into existence because I like him.
Came up a month ago. I know it.
Keep an eye on Bullock. Michael Booker Jr. Okay, my former teammate, Oceanside's finest. Keep an eye on Michael Booker Jr. He should be on scholarship. I'm telling you right now.
And that could change.
I'm telling you right now. Well, if the NIL goes the way that they want it to, Coach Rule will put about 25 to 30 walk-ons on scholarship. You watch. Sean Patton should be an economist. I'm just saying. So I'll give you Bullock. Booker Jr. Should I see who copies my material? Because no one else will think this. Let me give you another one. Watch what happens with Heinrich Harburg. If he does, listen to me.
Please tell me you're going to say he's changing positions.
If he doesn't play quarterback, he will be playing somewhere.
I thought that, especially after his dunk and team commitment week, because that was like the pinnacle of his athleticism for me. Because I've known what he's been.
Do you know who else was sensational in a dunk contest? Bullock.
Oh, yeah, Bullock was. Yeah, go back a little bit.
Again, guys that are wearing black jerseys all the time, too. Right, if you I spy like I do, random videos.
Yeah, you also I spied some people that weren't wearing jerseys.
Yeah, we probably have to have that conversation pretty soon. We'll wait till after the presser. This would be great if we still did the morning dump. But there are some guys that are returning that I'm a little concerned about. And all three of them. All three have had significant playing time. I know now who the guy was that was the starter that lost his jersey as a captain. And it makes sense because he's a line tower. But hopefully they can reel him back in.
Are you going to hold on to that info? Let people kind of
marinate on that.
Marinate on it?
So give me Booker Jr., Harburg.
And Bullock. I like your Harburg play. Like, if I had money on somebody, it'd be him.
Yeah. Well, I thought he was going to be a tight end coming out. He'll be something if it ain't a quarterback. Yep. And it could be a quarterback.
We will get into the presser next.
Coffee and Cream with Rogers and Benning on Hail Varsity Radio.
Hey, welcome back. Moments away from hearing from Coach Rule. Out in Lincoln, just waiting for that video to pop up on so we can attach the audio and send it out to you. Because we're just as interested as you are to hear how day one has gone, just a week removed from spring break, and it's spring season. Is it really spring tomorrow?
Isn't it the 21st or 22nd?
Is that really right?
I should say.
I agree with Lance. It doesn't feel like it, but I also agree with you. He's in Florida, so he can rock sometimes when it comes to weather.
I think it's going to be like 50 in Lincoln today. And I know they split practice. They were going to be inside and outside.
It's today.
Is it today?
It's today.
Okay. It's close. Yeah, I mean, what is today? 21st?
20th.
Okay. All right. Let's roll then.
You're good.
So
why would I doubt you? I mean, you were right with basketball things. You've been right with now weather, and now you're right with football.
I want to be right with these guys, though. Right? Because, like, Nebraska fans that have been here for a while, like, they know. Shane, let me know when we're close. And you may want to look at Huskers.com, too, because they'll video feed that thing, I think.
Okay.
You just try to watch and pay attention, right? And there's always, forever, there's been these spring guys that play well in the spring, and the fan base is always like, you know, and...
What are they like?
And it's like, will this correlate to fall? I'll give you one more. So I said Harburg.
Bullock Jr.
Bullock Jr. No, Booker Jr.
Booker Jr., excuse
and,
me. Bullock.
And Bullock. I'll give you another one. Isaiah Harris at the running back spot.
And I'm writing all these down.
And it's not just because we saw his parents at the watch party. They had all the KU gear on. And I was like, oh, come on. And she's like, hey, we're such and such parents. And I was like, oh, shoot. Glad I never badmouthed the kid. Good to meet you in person.
They're like, hey, do you remember what happened last year?
Yeah.
By chance?
And then I'll go the other way. Some guys that are incumbents that we better keep an eye on because they have been, boy, they've been quiet in the offseason. I'll give you three.
Let's go.
Let's go with Anthony Grant, Marcus Washington, and Miles Farmer. I'll give you those three.
You know, the Miles Farmer pick, I think, is on everybody's radar.
And that was my guy.
What happened last year.
That was my guy.
Right. But because of everything that kind of transpired last year, it's how is he going to get back in the right lane?
Yeah.
I can understand that pick.
Those are I don't know. I guess you call
Anthony Grant would be a shocker, I think, to people because they have such high expectations for him after seeing what he accomplished last season. So I think that would be a shocker. And I, you know what? Frankly, I think you made another shocking point
with
Marcus Washington. Because this is a guy that people were thinking, hey, Trey Palmer season's over. Marcus Washington was there last year. He had some big catches. Now he's got to be the next guy, right? I mean, I know the wide receiving room is huge.
Yeah.
It's massive. And they'll pluck and find their guys. But more times than not, I'd land on Marcus Washington. If you were telling me today who would be like the guy that you think is going to break out.
Full disclosure. I think people that know me or have listened to me say anything know that I'm a Marcus Washington guy. So any time I have a chance to, like, you know, hop on board, because I felt like he really stayed the course last year under some difficult circumstances. But this one is interesting because I just think the temperament and the protocol of the staff it's different. There's so much day-to-day do it this way. And some of it is blind faith. Like, it's kind of like if you believe in God, right? Like, it's real faith. It's believing in things that you have yet to see. And sometimes you have to just do things because people told you to. Right? And lay your head down at night and know, okay, they have my best interest at heart. I think if players, you know, if the majority of the team struggles with that, it's going to be a problem. Because let's not act like, and I'm telling you this, it is a 180 from a year ago. From academics to face-to-face accountability to being able to take online courses to wearing the same thing to practice regimen. It's all different. Right, like if you don't have the capacity to do what they did yesterday, which is to spend X amount of time walking through pre-practice so you know where to be once real practice starts. That's stuff we would do in high school and in Little League. But with a new staff, Yeah, I do it in college too. Hey, period one is like this. Hey, period two is like this. Hey, period three is like this. Hey, period four is like this. Like, just imagine the shock to the system that the players have went through. It's a lot. And it may not be for everybody. But for those that have an open mind and a blank slate, because one thing you'll hear me That's say key. This 2,000 times that we're together, and it's my educational background. I'm a big believer in meeting people right where they're at. Not where I want you to be, not where I think I can get you. I'm going to meet you right where you're at with zero pre-existing notions if I really want to pour into you. And I think that's how coaches have to be. You're not going to meet Betts the same place that you're going to meet Casey Thompson. Now, your core can be the same, but the interactions, it's just not. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to be like that. So it will be, I mean, it's going to be interesting.
I like how you brought up Betts. If I could give you two guys that I think would emerge this spring,
yeah,
one would be Xavier Betts. And reason for that is I think he's finally figured himself out. And I think it took some soul searching to do that with him. And I think he's back to who he wants to be. And so because of that, because of figuring it out mentally, and because of what I've heard from you in regards to him being in what could be the best shape of his life.
He right looks now. Fantastic. Just saw him this weekend.
I would say Xavier Betts is my one for comeback story.
You know how you can give a guy a hug and you can like feel the muscles in his back?
And wish you were him.
It's like, yeah. Yeah. I wish I was 6'3".
Right.
I don't want the hair pulled back with the braids, but I'll take
everything else feature-wise.
Yeah, he looked good.
Secondly to that, and because you mentioned Anthony Grant, I'll follow it up with this because I've been on this guy since the summer.
Gabe
Irvin Jr.
I think you love some GE too, don't you?
I do, and I really think I like him more because we were talking to, I think it was Mitch Sherman, whether it was last week or 2 weeks ago, and he had brought up how Anthony Grant is, you know, that people are expecting similar numbers from him, and I think he hit the nail on the head when he's talking Husker fans, hoping that Anthony Grant is going to produce like he did last year in the majority of those games. But if he isn't somebody that is all locked and loaded come today or, you know, throughout spring, throughout the summer, heading into the fall, Gabe Irvin has been a guy that has been locked and loaded in the weight room. Entering spring, on coach's radar. He was a starter when he first stepped foot at the university.
Yeah, you know who my man crush is, too, right on the staff?
EJ?
CJ Barthel.
EJ Barthel.
So it's like, okay.
So those are my two. And I know familiar names, right? If you look at DB's list, you're probably thinking like, ooh, these are more discoveries than they are.
Because that's what this process will be about.
Right. But because, like I said, being as it may, first spring, from what I've seen I like to gravitate to the comeback guy, which is why I like gravitating to Matt Rhule.
I think one of my other buddies got a chance to talk to him for a couple of hours this past weekend. And this particular buddy has got a different set of eyes. He's not what I would call knee elbow deep in Nebraska football. Loves Nebraska football, season ticket holder, but doesn't get in the weeds, right? Like, kind of stays above the fray. He's got a profession where I think reading people and being around people and being able to operate under duress is critical. And he said to me, he's like, DB, I'm just telling you, I have zero reservation. Not sure about the total number of wins and losses, but I have no reservation that Nebraska's hired the right guy. And it's weird, right? I talked to somebody on the administrative team on Friday for probably 45 minutes. on the phone. We're going back and forth about a lot of different things, what some other conferences are proposing, and we're talking about NIL and coaches and stuff like that. And he said, you know, it's been good so far from our vantage point, because he's challenged us on some things, and by he I mean Coach Rhule, and we needed to be challenged. Right? Like, if you're embracing that, you know that you got a chance to move in the same direction. Are we ready with the presser?
I'm just following along.
Yes, Shane?
No, not yet.
Yeah, I see the throng, the contingency.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm just kind of keeping point. And yes, on YouTube, we are waiting for that presser to start airing so that we can turn to that. So hold tight as we are just trying to figure out how much longer it may be. But continue your point.
So I think, again, I go back to what I always talk about in education, right? Shared vision needs shared language. And then everybody can pull in the same direction. Because all we talk, oh, man, everybody wants to pull in the same direction. You know, we heard that with Moose and Frost and some of that contingency. But the common language and the shared language was missing. And you can't have it without protocol, because that is where the built-in accountability is. I'm just going to continue to stress that. And so I think with these guys and this staff so far, now we'll see if they can play a lick of football, but it won't be due to the fact that they're unorganized and not on the same page. You talk about doing, and I've said this since I've been coaching, I said being great is just being good all the time. Don't be an 8 one day and a 2 the next. If you're a 6, be a 6 every day. And coaches will figure out the rest, especially once you get to a certain level. It's just the guessing games that sucks. And I think they'll play in a certain way where you'll be able to, I think, see at least the baseline of consistency. Again, don't know how that, you know, relates to wins and losses, but I do think it's cool. It's at least an advantage that there's respect for the other guys in the conference, other coaching staffs. They know other staffs inside and out. But listen, inside and out. Well, I know such and such from such and such. Yeah, he was a good friend with such and such. And so when we were talking and we get a chance to know these guys, we know that kind of this is what they're about. I like this staff over here. I like this staff over here. I like this staff. He knows every record. This staff knows every record of every team in the Big Ten since Nebraska's been in the Big Ten, right? This team's here. This team's here. I'm 0-7 here. I'm, you know, I'm 3-4 here. I'm here. I'm here. I'm here. We play here. I'm
sure,
here.
It's never left the whiteboard either.
It's up there, right? So I think it's there's just some key things that I like. And the attention to detail and the same way to do things, I think, is part of it. We laugh. Oh, you know, they're wearing the same thing now. Or, oh, you want my guys to be like your guys? Yeah. Yeah, I do. Because I think when you mix up teams and you do stuff like that, there has to be some skin in the game. And if I'm so much different from you and I can't relate to you, why am I going to be for you? I mean, at its core, that's the gist of it, right?
Yeah.
It sounds simple, but it's not easy.
I'm really interested and intrigued at the fact of who's going to show up day one that's already there, and who's going to show up and develop throughout the spring.
Good question.
Like, those are two points that I'm really curious on, because, as you said, and you put emphasis on it in your last point, the attention to detail. Yeah. They know who they are, and they're okay with being who they are and soaking in the knowledge from the coaching staff and the effort that and the expectation that is put on them. So who's there? Who's already there and is just going to thrive throughout this process? And who's on the list of, you know, you show signs of promise? right? There is a light at the end of the tunnel for you.
You know
but
what's
I'm
funny about that?
Curious to know what role that is.
Did you bug my phone?
No.
I think you did.
Maybe.
So here's
my text messages are blue though.
So here, you use Android. So here's the thing. I love how they seem to be on. They'll tell you right now, hey, I think this guy's 6 months away. I think this guy's about a year away. Hey, I think, and you know my favorite thing about what you just said, the development and being on the same page with who's on their way? Like all good leaders, bringing the middle closer to the top and the bottom closer to the middle is where this whole thing is at. Coach Rule used an example once. He said nothing. He said it's not. He said, listen, Damon. Actually, he said DB. He said, listen, DB, here's the deal. Some people use thirds. I'm going to use the 10%. You know, some players are going to, you know, a third of your team's going to do what you tell them to do regardless of what's going on. A middle is going to kind of question it, but do it anyway. And he said another third, they're just never going to do it. He said, we need to make that middle pretty fat and bring the top of the middle closer to the top and the top of the bottom closer to the middle. But I'm not worried about the bottom third so much. I'm not going to let my guys see that this is where all my attention's invested because I'm not going to ever get those guys anyway. So we need to be more efficient as a staff. He said, I'd look at it like this. He said, when kids are picking a high school and you're talking about academics versus athletics, I swear to goodness he knew me 10 years ago. Because I always said this, and I said this with school choice. Well, you want to go to this school? I said, listen, smart kids will be smart wherever they go. So what else is in school choice, whether it's academics, support, or athletics, the environment, whatever? He goes, a 3.5 in school is going to be a 3.5. Those kids are going to be high achieving because they're high achievers. He said, you know when you need to worry? When you're a 3.1 and you go to a 2.7. We can't have 3.1s going to 2.7s. That's where I'm at with this program.
Right.
I was like.
Still falling out of your chair.
Anybody that's ever listened, and it's not just because it's a me thing. It's best practices. It's in every educational model that you can ever think of about how to do business. And he's making it applicable to football with getting – if you don't have that philosophy, Drew Down, you cannot be a good developer. Because do you know what bad developers do? They say, oh, man, you've always been that – you always will be, I'm moving on to what looks a little better. Mm-hmm. Then you take the little better guy, and it's like, oh, man, I tried to get him ready.
Not really what you were talked up to be.
Not it. So I got to go get better than that and then start from there.
And now you're at your peak, right? Now you're at, hey, I'm at 5 stars, and I can't go any higher.
Yeah,
right?
And now you get the 4 and 5 star that isn't like a 4 or 5 star. And they're mad, so they go elsewhere. Do you get the picture where, like, that's what's been going on? So, if you're a 3.1 guy that is worried about not going to a 2.7, you teach differently. You just do.
Right.
And you don't want the 2.7s to go to a 2.3. You don't want the 2.3s to go to a 1.7. You want to be moving the ball forward and be forward thinking. That way you don't have these preconceived notions. And I always say this, just because something once was doesn't mean it always will be. And I'm acknowledging that typically the best indicator of future performance is past behavior. But if people were always going to be people and never change and never get better, there's no sense in going to work.
To your educational point, if you drop from a 3.1 to a 2.7, it's okay, but how do you bounce back?
Yeah.
Because classes get harder as your schooling goes on, just like football gets harder as the year goes on. Practices get harder as the year go on. If you do take a step back, how do you take a step forward? And I think that all plays into development.
Yeah.
Is what are you instilling into these guys to get them to where you know they can be, to reach their potential? There has to be a willingness to do it. And if it's there, great. You can work with that. To some degree, though, if it isn't there, you made Matt Rhule's job a lot easier. He said, hey, our roster is huge. I mean, if you can't do it, that's cool. I wish you the best. Good luck wherever you go. It's just not going to fit here.
Yeah, and remember, I mean, he's played with 70 guys before. So he's played with 65 guys before. So he's not afraid to do that either. But, I mean, when you're hiring, you know, 10 new nutritionists, you know, 6 new film guys, you know, like, he's turned the whole thing around because there's – ask the players something when you go down there. Just say, hey, you know, do you notice any difference about, like, the training table or food? Well, he changed the whole deal, right? And so guess what guys want to do now? Stick around and eat. And it's no disrespect to Dave Ellis because I think Dave Ellis is a genius. But Dave needed more help. Right, couldn't
yeah,
do
if you
it.
Have a bunch of hands in the basket. It's easier to get something done.
He needed more help, right? So what's Coach Rhule going to do? How many more do we need in nutrition? 10, 12, 15? Oh, that's right. I saved some money down here. I know that my school makes 100 mil. They only spent 35. I know we have revenue. I'm just going to ask the questions.
And speaking of revenue, good on the Nebraska fan base for constantly supporting this school.
I think we're ready to go, Shane. No,
they would not be in this position otherwise financially. Are we good?
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, he's on. I told you to go to the Nebraska site, football, at Huskers.
Yep. 28 seconds ago, he just stepped in. Can we get there, Shane? On Twitter, Nebraska Huskers.
So it's Husker. It's Nebraska football at Husker FB Nation.
We are getting there right now. Coach Rhule at the podium, taking his spot.
It's almost like I talk to myself sometimes.
Well, that's where I'm at. I don't see it.
Here, we'll take a moment. We'll step away. We'll get this figured out, and then we'll get this potted up. Shane, good?
It's not on mine.
All right. We'll go to break. More CNC next.
Coffee and Cream with Rogers and Benning on Hale Varsity Radio.
Hey, tough timing there on the break, but let's go listen in to Coach Rhule now.
Especially, like, we got Luke Reimer. He's running a whole new defense, man. Like, that can be really, really hard, right? You got guys coming in from different programs. I mean, you got guys coming in from Georgia and Texas. Like, why are we doing it this way? But we don't have a lot of that. So I would just say there's just a really good core of kids on this. I say kids, really good core of men on this team who do things right. And like, I know I said this, and people probably hear things I say, and like they don't know why I'm saying it. Like, you go back and look at last year's team; they could have thrown in the towel. They battled all the way to the end. They beat Iowa. They had a 3.1 GPA. When you have a staff change, you have a 3.1 GPA. That's outrageous. So there's just so many good people in the program, and but yeah, there's a lot of lack of coachability in the world today, and we have a lot of guys here that are being pretty coachable.
I know you felt good about how Tony and the defensive staff was coming together a few weeks ago when you talked. Did they take time on the field for each other with them, or did you feel good about where they are with the language and all that?
Oh, the language is good. You know, it just Tony probably has to get adjusted to me. And, you know, in the way that probably some of the things that I'd like to have done, and I'm getting adjusted to Tony, right, and the way he does some things. So I think there'll be a melding. To me, it's not, like, everyone always focuses on the scheme. Like, you know, there's been 3-4 teams that win the national championship. There's been 4-3 teams, 4-2-5 teams. I mean, you know, to me, it's really about how you do what you do. So the standards of the way that we practice, the way that we strip the ball, the way we move from drill to drill, those are the ones that are important to me. So, like, we literally, like, I take notes. You guys will be at practice, I'm assuming, at some point. I take notes the whole time in my phone, and then we go in and we meet, and I say, now let's talk about this. Tell me why we're doing that. It's really important that we go through this process now in the spring, so when we hit the fall, there is no gray area. You know, that's the worst thing you can give players is gray area. It's got to be concrete. And you have to be really humble as coaches. You have to sometimes say, you know what, guys, we've been coaching it this way. We're going to switch it to this because we think it'll be better for us. So there's multiple ways to do things. We just want to make sure we're giving our guys the best chance. I like our backs. Gabe Irvin's probably been one of the stars of the offseason. He's one of the fastest guys on the team at 221 pounds, 222 pounds. To me, he can hopefully be that battering ram that puts games away. Again, four times last year, had the lead in the third, going into the fourth, or in the fourth quarter. And so I'll never get used to that. we're always going to preach a fourth quarter shutout. And fourth quarter shutouts are helped by the offense when you can have 75 yards rushing in the fourth quarter. So those are things that we believe in. And I think Gabe has had a sensational camp. AJ's got a ton of talent. AJ, you know, obviously played a little bit, then got hurt last year. I'm excited to see what he can do. Ramir Johnson, you know, when I go back and watch the tape over the last 2 years, he's a guy that consistently flashed to me. He's healthy. He's doing a really nice job. And I'm just trying to think if there's any. Oh, and then I think Emmett's had a really good spring. Anthony Grant's not with us right now. I've suspended Anthony until such time as I feel like he's ready to rejoin the team. Working on just academics and just general things with him. Nothing bad other than just sort of our standards as a program. So Anthony's not practicing with us today, and that'll be day by day. Good kid. Just have to get him going in the right direction.
And Matt, is Chris Hickman practicing, or what are you guys?
Chris Hickman is not on the team. Tyree Johnson's not on the team.
Nice to
and neither back. One of those, both those guys on their own, you know, moved on. Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, I think you guys can tell I love the off-season program. I love the mat drill. I love all that stuff. But this is great, right? This is great to get out there and do football and coach football and really, watch these guys kind of build their craft, right? And then just – again, just try to help them, man. Like, understand. Like, I was talking to one of the guys in here. He's a freshman, and he's getting a little frustrated today. I'm like, do you want to play in the NFL? He's like, yes. I'm like, how far away is that? It's 4 years away. Like, we're ready to, like, just think about a doctor, man. Like he's learning all these little things to lead him to being a doctor over 4 years. Like, just get a little bit better. So it's fun to kind of turn it into football, but it's also fun just to get out there with the guys, man. This is the University of Nebraska. That's the first time I've seen that helmet. Like, that iconic helmet. So it's pretty cool for me, just on a personal note, to be out there and see all that.
One or two more. Eric Gilbert, Thomas Fedoni, can you just talk about how they...
Yeah, Fedoni's mad at me right now because I'm limiting what he's doing, you know. And, you know, he's completely healthy, but I'm just going to limit him all spring. You know, I mean, we got to get him to the season, you know. And I always believe it takes a long time for an ACL to truly heal. So I'm kind of, you know, picking my spots. So he's mad, but that's what I love about him. He's competitive. Gilbert's kind of learning as he goes, right? I mean, he's a big physical kid. Been really happy with, you know, Borkature and Lindemeyer. Those guys have played a lot of football, right? The AJ's done a nice job. You know, Chase Androff. James Carney's no longer on the team as well. He's left the team. So, but those guys are all doing a good job. Franklin's not doing a nice job. So that's a good group. They're a big physical group. You know, we moved Brody Tagaloa, who had been with the tight ends last year. We moved him over to the defensive line, even though he's limited during training camp. And a guy that I think's had a really good camp winner is Jake Applegate. You know, he's coming off surgery. He's up to about 237 pounds. His GPS times are pretty fast. So he's limited right now. He's in a green jersey, no contact. So he can only do Indy and 7-on-7. But I like what I've seen. I'm anxious to see him develop at that position.
Was Jake Applegate on the defensive side?
He was on the defensive side on last year's staff, and I asked him to move. I just went back and watched the tape from high school. He was a receiver, so we're looking for tight ends. We'd like to play with multiple guys at the tight end position. And Janiran Bonner is another guy that we've moved from wide out to like a hybrid F tight end. Like, I think Janiran's a guy that can do a lot of different things. So he's like 217. If we can get him like 222, I think he's like a chess piece. If you go back and, you know, watch some of the things that we've done over the years or what Sat's done at South Carolina, like, we like tight ends who can also play tailback, who can also play wide out, you know, that you just kind of don't know what we're in. So I'm hopeful that he can maybe do that.
Any other updates on personnel, whether that be suspensions or.
Yeah, I think I gave you guys. I think I gave you guys the because the guys those guys weren't on the team from the since the beginning of the semester, so I don't think they've been on the roster. James, great kid, just decided to not play. You know, he's moved on just recently, and then Anthony Grant and Tommy Hill were not allowed to practice today, so that'll be a day by day thing.
You guys have been so effective at switching guys at positions over the years. When you go about that, do you find guys are pretty receptive, or have you kind of worked that through with like a guy like Bonner talking about this is why we see you at this spot?
Yeah, I think guys are probably more into it now because we can point to some of the success we've had. I think, you know, when you've had some coaches who've, you know, coached in the NFL and they all want to get to the NFL, hopefully that helps. But again, we never make anyone do it. Like if I say, hey, listen, I really think this is your best shot, and the guy's like, I don't want to play that, then I get it. I understand. You know, we did some of it, you know, we do some of it kind of in micro doses, right? We have some guys that'll practice both ways. Like you'll come out to practice and, you know, I have some guys that'll probably play tight end and D line because I want to see who they are and what they can be. So, you know, just trying to give a comp for guys like, hey, this is what I think you can do. Again, when the coach sees something in you, then he wants to try you somewhere. Hopefully they take it as that, not, hey, I don't think you can do this. So I think the amount of time we've tried to spend building relationships hopefully helps. But I don't really move anybody unless I really think, hey, you could really help us at this position. Anybody else? All right.
Thanks,
coach.
That's
right.
Well, there you have it. Coach Rhule talking after day one of spring. I looked at DB and I said, hey, you know, with this staff, I don't think you're going to get anything that is too much to hold in, right? They are not afraid to just tell you how it is. There is no hiding details.
I kind of like that. And hopefully, you know, I think people that have listened to us long enough or me or you in your former life that have followed you over from your other stints is your accuracy will hopefully precede you. We'll tell you, I think, some things on our show that we do that most people either won't or can't. And a lot of it is because Coach Rhule's the same way. Happen to have some unique relationships, which we won't take advantage of. But man, I was shocked. He came right out of the gates with the Anthony Grant deal.
I thought he'd hold that in a little bit longer. And
well, you knew when he didn't reference him for like the first three or four, it's a problem.
We are so fortunate on the show to have DB in the seat next to me because the interactions that he's been able to have with this staff and recruits and just the area, I mean, like this is DB's umbrella. This is his bubble. He will have just knockout information. Knockout. And so, I mean, I can't appreciate that any more than I don't think our listeners can.
It's all good. No, I need a good partner, too. Shane, so we got a lot to do, man.
We still have a ton more to get to.
There's a lot in there that he didn't say.
So what we're going to do is take a break and get back to it.
Coffee and Cream on Hail Varsity Radio with Andrew Rogers and Damon Benning.
Overshoots everyone. Scooped up by Roberts, and that'll do it. The Knights have slain the Dragon for the second time in NCAA tournament history. A 16 has beaten a 1, and the FDU Knights are that 16, knocking off number 1 in the East, Purdue.
Our guy Kevin Kugler is just the one seed killer.
I'm like a proud peacock. Like that guy groomed
like
me.
Like St. Peter's?
He groomed me like one of my besties.
Nice.
It comparison. Is so good. And we're fortunate here in Omaha. We got the Kevin Kuglers, the Nick Boss, the Bishop. Like we're just fortunate to have good
we
friends.
We are very fortunate to have some great announcers come out of this area, and I mean
Kugler taught me basically everything I know, so I listen to every word he says for the last 15 years.
I've been listening to him forever, and when
he's
I
amazing.
To Omaha, I'm like, wow, I can't believe an icon like him.
I texted him
here.
As soon as that thing went final. I go, wait a minute, didn't you do UMBC Virginia too? He's text sure did.
Sure did. Let's welcome in Zach Peerless, senior writer for CBS Sports. Also somebody that does a pretty nice job when
yes,
it comes
he
does. To covering all things sports, at @Zach_Peerless on Twitter. Zach, good morning.
Morning, guys. How are you?
We're good. We're very, very good.
Hey, we just got done talking about the 16 seed upsets. And at the start of the show, we were also talking about how after a play-in game, your coach walks into the locker room and says, we can beat Purdue. We can beat this team. And kind of the weird uproar that got sparked behind that saying of, I mean, what else is a coach going to say in that moment outside of trying to instill belief into that team? Did you think going into this tournament that Purdue was the one seed that was susceptible to losing to a one? Or to a 16, excuse me?
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that guard play is what wins you games in March. And we've seen so many great guards carry teams, and we've seen teams without great guard play kind of fall apart early. So Purdue, you know, there were always questions about those guards. They had struggled against the press in the Big Ten tournament. You know, and as great as Zach Edey is, there are teams that can throw, you know, basically what Fairleigh Dickinson did. They threw three guys at Zach Edey, and they were like, let these guards beat us, let these forwards beat us. Zach Edey, he's going to get his, but if he doesn't have, you know, 30 points and 20 rebounds, we might have a chance. And as, you know, the longer a 16 seed sticks around, they can stay there. And with Fairleigh Dickinson, they just stuck around. They executed their game plan really well. It was really clear that they knew exactly what they were going to do with Edie. They were consistent with it. They didn't have, you know, those breakdowns where you see Edie just dominating. Obviously, there were some possessions here and there. But, yeah, when you look at Purdue, that team makeup of one dominant big man, you know, and the guards just getting simply outplayed is kind of the formula that you look for in March upset.
See, it's interesting, right? Because, and maybe it's just because we're so close in Big Ten country, but last week I asked Kerry James. The week before that I asked Mike DeCourcy, and I'm thinking, guys, it just seems to me that not only is it because it's March and it's Izzo, but they're healthy. He's getting continuity in the lineups. I said it seemed like Michigan State has another gear left in them. Is this just simply Izzo, or did you like them coming in as a team that was kind of ramping up?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and I think it's so hard to kind of try to balance how good a team has been all year versus how good a team is lately, and it's hard to see, you know, that balance. Like, you know, we just talked about Purdue. That team just won a Big Ten tournament. You know, it's so hard to balance those two. I think that the one thing that you love about Michigan State, obviously beyond Tom Izzo getting the best out of his teams in March, is the fact that they have guards who are experienced, who are unafraid. Tyson Walker kind of struggled all afternoon, was great down the stretch. So that team is, you know, I always come back to those guards. And Izzo did such a great job stealing a few minutes here and there for both of them, stealing some good minutes out of their bigs. It was just a really, really impressive performance. And at the end, you know, that game was a one-point game down the stretch, and Michigan State really just put it away from there.
Zach, when looking at the bracket, if you were looking at it blank, knowing what you know now, would you have expected that the Midwest would be the group that has essentially held the chalk for the most part?
Yeah, I mean, I think, man, going back and looking at it, I actually somehow, even though the rest of my bracket is in shambles, I actually still am intact in the Midwest. And I think the big thing there is, you know, Houston is such a tough team. If you watch that Auburn game, they're down 10 at halftime, and they just, you know, they just step it up on both ends in such a way that, is kind of championship caliber. I know that it's hard to do that in a round of 32 game, but really that second half was Houston at its best. Miami, again, I've loved Miami all year. I actually have Miami beating Houston this coming up, you know, in a few days. But Miami, love all the guards there. And then Texas and Xavier, I think that that kind of is that one region where you look at it and you say, with the guard play, with the experience, that was kind of, at least to me, that was kind of as expected.
So if you could reseed, would you go – I told Andrew I wasn't going to die on this hill, but I put UCLA as the second number one overall seed, but it was primarily because I picked UCLA to win the national championship. He went with Houston because he's Sasser's now all of a sudden getting more help. Some like Texas – if you could reseed, who's the second number one overall behind Bama, assuming you like Bama won?
Yeah, I think Alabama hasn't done anything to disprove where they're at. I still think it's Houston. I definitely can see the argument for UCLA. I just think Houston, you know, as time goes by and Sasser is going to get healthier, they're just going to continue to play. Well, you know, these guys have been there before. Kelvin Sampson has been there before. I still think that they're that second number one seed. They're just, you know, so much experience. They can beat you in so many ways. And I really do think that that's still the second best team left.
Hey, Zach, whose path do you like most down the stretch here? Because there are a lot of interesting matchups in the Sweet 16, but if you had to choose one team where you thought, hey, this is my favorite team to path its way to the finals, who would it be?
I think it's still got to be Alabama. When you look at the bottom of that bracket, I've really liked Creighton all year, but that is, you know, that is certainly a team that they don't have a ton of depth. They're going to run into problems with Alabama, who has so much depth. And then Princeton, obviously, you know, we have the Belle of the Ball, the Cinderella story, and they're really good. But if they were to beat Creighton, they'd have trouble with Alabama. And then the, you know, the Sweet 16 matchup, Alabama and San Diego State. San Diego State is a really awesome team. If you haven't watched a ton of them, because they always seem to be tipping off at midnight or something, they are really good. Matt Bradley is a guy who can just go and score, and they have the length to match up with Alabama. I just wonder if they're going to have enough offense to stay with them. So I'm going to say Alabama, probably easiest path forward. And I probably think that was the case at the start of the tournament too. So not a whole lot changing there. But Alabama, if you're a fan of them, they're really looking good right now.
So let's talk depth and tenacity, because both these teams embody it. I give you UConn or Texas.
That is, oh man. Before the tournament, I said that Texas had the best depth in the country, and I feel like I have to stick with it because it was somehow only a week ago that I wrote that, but it's crazy how fast it goes. But really, really good in terms of both of these teams. I love that UConn has two legit big men, and they, you know, can just impact any matchup so hard. But, yeah, I still think it's Texas. When you have your second leading scorer coming off the bench in Serge Ibaka Rice, that's pretty good.
Zach, this is a darn shame because we live in, of course, the Creighton market, right? People up here love themselves some Creighton basketball. But they're playing against the now Cinderella team in the tournament. But I don't even want to get to just that game. I want to ask you this. Is Princeton not receiving the Cinderella love that they should be receiving this year? Because it seems like what they've been able to accomplish in the tournament has just been overlooked by the fact that they got merged into the same bracket that a 16 beat the 1, and everybody was on the FDU train, and not a lot of people were on the Princeton bus.
Yeah, I think that is tough just because, you know, when Fairleigh Dickinson wins that first game, everyone forgets about Princeton. Everybody forgets about Furman. Everybody forgets about these other big upsets. And then you look at Princeton beating Missouri. Everyone was still waiting for Fairleigh Dickinson to play the next night. So some of it, I think, is timing. But the thing about Princeton that I love is that they are so true to themselves. They're not going to differ no matter who the opponent is. Obviously, they're going to make adjustments, but they're really under control offensively. They move the ball. They're absolutely a Cinderella story. I mean, I was working last night, and I saw this note from the research team at CBS Sports that said that a Ivy League team hadn't beaten an SEC team in the NCAA tournament since 1942. Like, that is as Cinderella as it gets.
So it's interesting, though, because I'm kind of looking at, like, style of play and what has to happen. And I'm a junkie. Princeton's a lot more athletic than I think the lay person may give them credit for, especially how they can play 1 through 5. The conventional wisdom is, well, Princeton has to guard Creighton and Kalkbrenner, but Kalkbrenner has to guard two. Is this simply about shot making or consistency of who each team is?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I mean, Creighton, when their guards are making shots, I mean, Nembhard was terrific. Trey Alexander is really, really good. He's obviously had some ups and some downs. But I think Creighton, the biggest thing that I've just absolutely loved about watching Creighton play this year is that they are so smart in avoiding fouling but still making things difficult on other teams.
Yeah.
You know, the way that they can do that is just really, really outstanding. And yeah, I think that it'll come down to shot making, but I just love McDermott's done such a great job stealing a couple minutes here and there for his starters because they're not that deep. And I think Creighton is just going to have an edge in length and athleticism, but it is a really, really interesting matchup. Princeton is a very good team.
Both teams very well coached, and both programs have players on their team, on the court, all five guys, those starters, that are very coachable. Hey, our poll question today, Zach, was this. The best Sweet 16 matchup for the average sports fan with no tie to a team is blank. Is it Texas Xavier, K-State, Michigan State, UCLA, Gonzaga, or Creighton, Princeton?
Mm. Oh, man. I think Xavier, Texas is so good. It's going to be so fun. I mean, you watch Xavier's offense just get going.
Without Fremantle.
Right. And I said before the tournament, I said I think that Xavier is probably an Elite Eight team at worst with Zach Fremantle. You just watch that offense go, and they get enough stops defensively, and that's an elite team. That's an Elite Eight team, a Final Four team. Without Fremantle, that depth, again, you know, they kind of remind me a little bit about Creighton. Just the depth isn't quite there, whereas Texas, we just talked about, is so deep. But at the end of the day, you play 5-on-5. You know, if your 1-9 is better than another team's 1-9, but the other team's 1-5 is the one that's on the court and is better than your 1-5. That's going to be a really fun matchup. Texas is so versatile. Xavier is so rooted in what they do, and they have the personnel. They have the firepower. Sully Boom is awesome. That's going to be such a fun game.
He cannot be boom or bust, though. He has got to be a guy that scores the ball because he's going to have his hands full because they'll get the ball out of his hands.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I love high level guard play in March. I feel like a broken record saying it, but this is going to have it. They have the bigs and the wings that can make things really, really fun. I mean, Colby Jones is such a fun player to watch, and Xavier does such a good job in varying their offensive sets. They can run it through the guards. They can run it through the wings. Nunji has been really, really good. Obviously a pretty, long, winding path in his college career. So going to be really, really fun to watch there.
How about the most underappreciated guard in the tournament, if not the country, for a team that was a 3 seed? Harlem's finest, man. How good is Noel? He is. You just watch. I mean, he turns it over a little bit. I think he's I don't know, he's almost four a game, but man, he is, when he's going, he's got K-State fearless.
Absolutely. I was about to say before you said it, the fearless factor is so strong with him. I love the fact that he, at 5'9 or whatever he is, he's, you know, easily into the lane. He's finishing over bigger players. He is just so, you know, like, he is a guy who, when you need a bucket, and I look at this field, when you need one bucket, there yeah. aren't a whole lot of guys who I'd rather have the ball in their hands. He's so willing to just be the guy. He's not going to back down. And I think we saw over the weekend there were some guards who just didn't really have it, you know, down the stretch of games. Yeah. They didn't either want to score. They were struggling down the stretch. He's so fun to watch, but the biggest thing for him is the inner belief that he can be the guy. And I know that they have Keontae Johnson, who's obviously terrific as well. He is the guy who, but Marquise Noel, just so fun to watch. He has been all year, and that duo really, really underappreciated. I know that they weren't, you know, the best team in the Big 12, but really good, really fun. And if they can keep those turnovers at a minimum, you know, Marquise Noel, just awesome.
Let me ask you something, a little off the beaten path, but since we're talking K-State and Tang, I've been saying for a couple of months, I got the Patino one right to St. John's. I still think Cooley goes to Georgetown. Providence is going to need a job. Georgetown's going to be a job. And I don't think Tang's moving, but mm-hmm. yet. And a similar apples to apples, as I give the orange juice reference, do you have more confidence in Shrewsbury or Tang not being a flash in the pan, got some longevity to him?
Wow, that's a great question. Man, I really like Jerome Tang's, you know, I've just seen more of it off the court. I loved when they stormed the court earlier this year. I don't even remember which game it was. It might have been, I don't even remember, maybe the Kansas game, I think, that they won. And he said something to the effect of, this is the one court storming that you get. You know, after this, it's expected that we beat this team, these types of teams. And I loved that. I absolutely loved what he said. I think that just in terms of what I've seen, I love Micah Shrewsbury as well, but it's so hard to dislike this Kansas State team. They play so hard. They have so much confidence. I really, really like what Jerome Tang's done, and his, you know, his track record before getting hired with his long stint at Baylor. I really like what Jerome Tang's building, and I think I have to give him the slight edge in this question, but it's tough.
I'll stay off the beaten path with my next question and keep it with Rick Pitino. Who signs their deal first? Is it Rick Pitino or Aaron Rodgers?
I'd have to say Rick Pitino, because the Packers are under no pressure to send Aaron Rodgers now. What, you know, they have no reason to rush it. So Rick Pitino, I think.
Let me get you out of here on this. If you're looking at the job's done relative to the expectation levels coming in, where does Barnes and Tennessee go? They were kind of left for dead. They're not real healthy. They can't score a lick. They guard you like crazy. And he hasn't been a guy that has been like an over-the-hump guy. Like, give the devil his due?
Yeah, I think that's such a good example of how do you, you know, favor a team that's been really good all year and has had, you know, some really, really good wins, but maybe they came back in November and December versus a team that's coming in hot. Everyone seemed to love Duke in that game. I actually picked Tennessee, and the one big thing for me is that Tennessee is just a group of grown men. They are so experienced. Santiago Vescovi has been there before. And I mean,
looks like he's 30.
I know it. And, you know, he wins these games because he's so smart. He reads the defense so well. You have to give Rick Barnes his due. I mean, these guys, you talked about the injuries. They barely squeaked by Louisiana in the first, you know, in the round of 64. But they are just, again, I always look at, you know, how a team is consistent and in time. Can you still, you know, value those same core tenets of your of your team's identity while doing it with a bunch of different players, a bunch of different lineups. And you look at Tennessee, and they've been able to do that even after Zakai Ziegler went out. They're just a really, really good team. They don't stray from who they are. And, yeah, Rick Barnes, so much credit to him.
Zach, let me sneak one more in. What was the best March Madness moment so far, in your opinion?
Oh, man, best March Madness moment. I think from the madness standpoint, that Furman, Virginia ending. And real quick, I've seen so many people rag on Kihei Clark, and this is a guy who had a tremendous, tremendous career. I mean, aside from the last moment of it, a guy who at 5'9", maybe generously listed, ended up being a five-year contributor to a team that won a title in his freshman year. He was really, really a steadying ship. And I think if that's the only moment that you saw from Kihei Clark in Virginia this year, you're wondering what the heck happened. What is this team? What is this player? But his 5 years there was truly tremendous. And the fact that he made a mistake that was so against what he's done over the past 5 years, you know, he's so careful with the ball. But that was the madness. And that's, you know, sometimes you just can't explain March. You can't go back and say, well, Virginia had turnover problems all year. Well, Virginia did the, you know, they didn't have the guard play. They did. And just in one moment, that's what makes March Madness so good, is that sometimes you just can't explain one play here or there, and that one play ends up being the deciding factor.
Zach Peerless, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much. We will talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. Have a good one.
I appreciate it.
Zach Peerless, senior writer for CBS Sports, at @Zach_Peerless on Twitter.
May need to make him a regular, Shane.
What is your favorite March Madness moment so far? And if I can take it one step further, in the One Shining Moment video, will Eric Musselman's shirt ripoff make that video?
Yo, probably.
You think?
But that didn't bug me. Should it have?
Well, he's done it before.
Yeah, like,
so that's why it didn't bug me.
I mean, that's kind of his thing.
It is his thing, because somebody brought that up. A buddy of mine goes, like, why would he rip off his shirt? I'm like, well, it's kind of like his claim to fame. It's like, oh, he did it at Nevada, and now he does it here.
Drives me crazy a little more. Same conference, same starts with the same letter. Nate Oates drives me bonkers.
Oh.
He really does. I'm a big, and I blame my man Donnie for sending me the Oriema tweet about paying attention to body language.
Mm-hmm.
Nate Oates drives me up the wall.
Yeah, Nate Oates is not it. Like, he's working with some talented bodies right now, and he's put together a good team. But, boy, when we talk about transparency with Matt Rhule, you don't get that with Nate Oates.
Golly, sheepish, as my head coach likes to say.
Let's clean things up. Sports cleanup next.
Coffee and Cream with Rogers and Benning on Hail Varsity Radio. Things you wanted us to get to from the weekend, but we didn't.
Clean up on aisle 6.
It's the Coffee and Cream Sports Cleanup on Hail Varsity Radio.
Nice work there, Shaner. Nice work on
cleanup on aisle 6.
And our big voice guy can appreciate you as well. Before we get into the cleanup, I want to take a moment and tell you about the Beanery. I'll cheers the camera because I was at the Beanery not only this morning, but yesterday. And I tried something new yesterday.
We
get the smoothie.
Yes, peach, which Zoe wasted. She got the mango. Caleb got the peach. All in.
Way to add that she wasted it.
Oh,
which she wasted.
And I shouldn't have got the whipped cream on there because I knew that I would eat it or drink it if she didn't. But I gave in. I'm like, I'm going to give this little girl a shot. Nip. Quarter down, she's done.
Well, I got coffee from the Beanery. I tried the Pot of Gold latte. I don't know if you saw the little promotion on the window, but I'm like, that sounds good. A little salted caramel, some Irish cream. It was pretty dang tasty.
Salted caramel.
Ashley got one too, and she got an everything bagel because they have more than just coffee and smoothies, even though that's all DB and I ever get
at the Beanery. I bought the everything seasoning, even though not a huge fan. Everybody else likes it.
It's good. I like it.
Micah puts it in scrambled eggs.
Never tried that.
Yeah, just a little.
But I also don't eat scrambled eggs anymore.
Really?
Because I'm not 12.
Everybody.
Wow.
Because you're not 12?
Yeah.
Give me that
Yeah, right?
Don't put that crap on me.
I like scrambled eggs. Not my favorite, but I eat them. I didn't know.
I've had them before.
That's funny.
Because I'm not 12.
Well, he is.
Don't you say that about, like, chicken nuggets? I mean, you don't say that about scrambled eggs.
Agreed.
What?
Are those both little kids? He said that's something you'd say about chicken nuggets, well, not scrambled eggs.
No, because, like, would you say pizza rolls are for a 12-year-old?
Yes.
Well, then I'm 12. I eat chicken nuggets and pizza rolls.
Yeah, oh, but you're bashing scrambled eggs?
Nobody could
I mean,
do that.
I just... I like my eggs a certain way.
Which is the more adult choice? Scrambled eggs, pizza rolls, chicken nuggets. Really? Oh,
get at me. Get at me.
Dude,
I don't know. I think all of them are in the same ballpark.
Because I'm not 12. All right, thanks, Beanery, for starting that.
Yep, the Beanery starting our coffee and food and everything conversation, but let's get back into what's up.
Shane, did you get over to our favorite body shop, Dingman's Collision?
Ooh. I have not made it there yet. But
did Darcy not give you instructions? Because if you have something go wrong with your vehicle, you need to get over to Dingman's.
Right now.
Right there.
Can you tell me how to do that?
I'm there on Monday.
How to get to Dingman's?
Yeah.
Well, there's four locations throughout the metro area, Shane, with that standalone shop on 120th and Maple.
And
it's bright green. How do you miss that one?
And the estimates are right next to just the regular walk-in, too. Matter of fact, I just walked down to the double garage doors and they drove Caleb's car around. I said, no, I can get that. They're like, no, I got it. I was like, okay, meet you down there. So I walked the 15 paces, got an estimate in 15 minutes.
Oh, that's quick.
Oh, I mean, and they typed it up too. So, yeah, it was quick. And there were probably 5-6 people in. One guy I used to work with at OPS, Ted Carter. Name drop. Great, great, great guy.
The Ted Carter?
Different Ted Carter. This guy happens to be African American.
Oh, yeah, much different Ted Carter.
Not Top Gun Ted Carter. Well, he was tops in what he did for the district. But, yeah, it's a customer service, man. I swear by it. It's a big deal.
Oh. Clean. In every business.
Clean like up!
At Hale Varsity Club. Yeah. Customer service is key, which they have some of the best. Where we are right now, live from the H&H Chevrolet stage, cleaning up on what was it? Aisle 6? Aisle 12?
6. I think it was 6.
It was 6.
I know in like Cheaper by the Dozen, I think it's clean up on aisle 12 because they're a dozen.
And those kids were naughty.
And they made the dozen eggs over easy, not scrambled.
I'm the hack king, right, on TikTok. I saw the over easy hack. Guy cracked an egg, put it on a paper plate, covered it with another paper plate, put it in the microwave. I can't remember what the time was, a minute or something like that, and came out perfect.
No way.
I swear. Yeah, he did it like 14 times.
How did people figure that out?
I don't know. He did it like 14 times.
He said it. The first 13 times it didn't work.
He said if you're cooking in bulk, too, put them on a cookie sheet and put them in the oven, cover the sheet. I'm telling you.
Huh.
Yeah.
And
by the way, the carpet.
Do you get the flip? Like, so or is it sunny side up?
And the, no, you don't have to flip it.
So then it's sunny side up.
The yolk turns iridescent, so it's not still
on
yellow.
On its own?
Yes. Yes, that's hence
what?
Over easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know. Yeah, but
yeah,
that's
seriously
that blows my mind.
That must be why
plates.
He covers it with the paper plate. Paper plate, egg, paper plate. Man, and if you don't believe me, so Terrence, my guy, mm-hmm. Had some carpets that he tried to fix. So what did he do? He pinned the end down with a glass. He put ice cubes on it, and it
you
worked.
You told me that,
and it worked.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I
people that create hacks like that.
The guy said, "You mean I've been having curled carpets for 40 years, and I could have done this?"
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yes. Hey, Creighton women's basketball got knocked out by Mississippi State in the NCAA women's national championship tournament. So the women are out, but the women at Nebraska are still making headway in the NIT as they took down Northern Iowa over the weekend. Isabel Bourne.
Izzy Bourne, baby.
And 11. Jazz Shelley,
16, and 7.
How about Jazz back to getting buckets?
Yeah. Well, a gut punch was Sam Hybe leaving with injury. That I don't know if she will come back from, unfortunately. Yeah. But some positives. NU didn't have any turnovers in the first half. Any. You know how many that is?
Zero.
Zero. And they were 10 of 28 from three, which is a total of 40.9% from the field in totality from all of that. So good work by the women's basketball team over in Lincoln. And good work on the crowd. Nearly 6,500 people attended that game.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all.
Then Nebraska baseball finished 2-1 in a three-game series over the weekend. Probably should have had all three against Nichols, but
I have a question. I'll save it for tomorrow. Are you worried about Shaneman?
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit.
I don't want to press panic because they keep running him out there.
But you can acknowledge an issue. It's like when your check engine light comes on. It's like, do I need to go into the shop just yet?
Yeah. I just know what happened during that little win streak, and I was like, okay. But then I pitted against the bulk of what's been going on. I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I just asked the question. I got to get into it a little more.
Creighton baseball split with Wichita State over the weekend. They had a marathon win in game one that took them to 14 innings, yeah. I think. And in the 14th inning, they scored 8 runs. So it was a pretty easy path to victory from there. But good work by the Creighton bullpen because they just kept leaving shockers on base.
Hammer.
In the 11th, in the 12th, in the 10th, in the 13th, whatever inning, they were on base. Keeping it with baseball, here is where we will talk about the World Baseball Classic. The USA headed to the final, which is tonight, right?
Well, one is, right. So Mexico and Japan is tonight, right?
Right. Okay, yeah. So it's the semifinal.
Yeah, Sandoval and Sasaki will take the bump in case you're looking at pitching matchups.
You got to hope Japan moves on, right?
How about that?
Mm-hmm. It's upstairs. You got to hope Japan moves on, right? Like seeing Shohei, my boy Lars. Got to see Lars again.
I'm not a Shohei guy. I know you're going to want to fight me during baseball. I'm just not all in. You're looking at me like this. This blankety blank over here. I'm not a Shohei guy.
Why? Don't like that he's a pitcher and a hitter and awesome at both? You don't like that he plays for the Angels?
that's probably more of it. I mean, it is Anaheim, the knockoff suburb city. I'm just not.
Where you go to die,
yeah.
Anaheim.
So
tell that to Mike Trout.
Viva la Mexico. Andale, andale.
Yeah, you're all in on Sandoval tonight.
Yeah.
Also an Angel.
Unfortunately. But as long as people stop getting hurt in that country.
Mexico?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's not like I'm chomping at the bit to go to some parts of Japan either. Okay.
you experience your culture here in Nebraska. You go to Hy-Vee and get some
sushi. So at least I know I get an all-inclusive if I have to go pick. Okay?
Oh, man.
Hey, do not leave the resort.
Do not. That is... I don't know why
people... I'm going to be crowded in Japan regardless, so I'll probably take the all-inclusive.
Yeah, I don't know why people leave the resort. Like, that is a real thing.
Yeah, not your boy.
Still lots to get to. Unfortunately, we couldn't get to it all, but we're going to cap off the Husker conversation with Brady Oltman's next.
Coffee and Cream with Rogers and Benning on Hale Varsity Radio.
I would just say there's just a really good core of kids on this. I say kids, really good core of men on this team who do things right. And like, I know I said this and people probably hear things I say and like, they don't know why I'm saying it. Like you go back and look at last year's team. They could have thrown in the towel. They battled all the way to the end. They beat Iowa. They had a 3.1 GPA. When you have a staff change, you have a 3.1 GPA. That's outrageous. So there's just so many good people in the program, and but yeah, there's a lot of lack of coachability in the world today, and we have a lot of guys here that are being pretty coachable.
I got to say, DB, that goes back to what we said when we first started this show, whether it was Morning Dump or when we started Coffee and Cream, the game against Iowa, and reigniting that fire, that belief in these players, in this fan base, that this Nebraska team can compete with the big dogs no matter what. They didn't give up on the season. They fought to the very end. And the fact that Coach Rhule goes back and acknowledges that, I think that's big heading into spring. He capped off day one of spring by talking to the media, and Brady Oltmans was there. So let's welcome in Brady Oltmans now. He is, well, what is he not? What is Brady Oltmans is everything Nebraska football for Hale Varsity. He's also the recruiting reporter. He does a little bit of everything. Brady, good morning. What's up, man?
Morning, guys. Yeah, coming at you from the sixth floor of Memorial Stadium right now.
How about your versatility? Brady, something, nothing, or is this just me being like Walt Kaczynski from Gran Torino? Get off my lawn. How about in the early stages of the presser? Everybody was on time and dressed appropriately. Something or nothing?
I think it's kind of a look inside the window of like he wants everybody to meet a certain part of the standard, and part of that is make sure you look good when you walk out the door.
It's my old man take, right? It's like,
sir, yes, sir.
Listen, if it's not stadium-issued gear, you can't. Hey, now, full disclosure, Brady, why this warms the cockles of my heart is because I was a petulant, immature, high-maintenance prima donna. All of those adjectives. And I remember two games in particular, K-State and Colorado, in which I was suspended because I simply could not wear what I was supposed to wear. So my heart kind of like harkens back for that kind of discipline because I made it hard on myself. So when I hear that, I know it works. It sounds archaic, but it works.
Yeah, it's like the Allen Iverson rule in the NBA. You know, they instituted a dress code because he wanted to wear what he wanted to wear. But you gotta make sure the appearance and adhere to the standard that you want to instill. And I think that kind of speaks to what Rhule wants to do, and especially when he talks about culture.
Brady, you know, dive deeper into how Coach Rhule presented this information, the transparency that he spoke with. I mean, it just goes to show that this is not just him, but his staff, but they're not afraid to just tell you how it is. I don't think there's going to be any hiding of details with these guys. I mean, do you get the same feeling?
Yeah. They're pretty open to talk about anything. Guys who are positioning well in spring ball and practices, guys who are movers and shakers along the depth chart. Even just with Anthony Grant and Tommy Hill sitting out, being suspended from practices, he just kind of offered offhand, you know, yeah. They're not going to hide anything behind a velvet rope or a curtain. They're going to keep everything open a lot like what they're doing with recruiting. They're going to keep the doors open. If guys want to come in, visit, see if it's for them, they're going to go for it. So as a media member, I kind of salivate at that, you know, like let's open up the doors a little bit more.
So it's interesting to see how it plays out, but there's lots of things that I think typify his personality. He said some things this weekend. You know, he was talking about offering guys that he hasn't seen on campus or seen in person. And he said, you know, I'm not going to deviate, even though school X may have offered a guy, guys, don't panic. And he's talking to the rest of his staff. There's a way that we do things. Same as he said, man, Damon, you know, you'll come down, you know, whenever, and you'll come to junior day or you'll do something else, and you'll hear me say a lot of the same things. I'm not fancy. There's just a few core things I believe in. He'll say, you know, with my drills, I don't believe in 100 different drills. I think there's about 7 or 8 things that you need to do. What his consistency is, I'm not sure yet if it's because he's stubborn, doesn't know much else, does what he knows, or he knows what works. But whatever it is, because I don't know if it means W's, is there's no question he has a core set of things that he believes in all facets.
Yeah, and he kind of touched on that too, of like these are things that they know are somewhat successful. They worked at Temple, they worked at Baylor. And in the college game, they can be successful, you know? And I think that that's kind of interesting. Like, even the small things of, like, he mentioned quarterbacks won't throw as much indoor. They want to, you know, they'll let it ride outdoor, but he wants them to compete, perform in the elements rather than in the controlled environment of Hawks. Little things like that, I think it's the attention to detail that you see with Matt Rhule in general. But it definitely shows in the workouts and the drills that they do this spring and in the winter.
You mentioned roster shuffles, and we kind of talked about this a little bit after the presser concluded. And the name that got tossed around was Southeast graduate Jake Applegate. And that was a name that had popped up on our radar about a month and a half ago, I would say. And it was when they were talking about, hey, installing a fullback and possibly getting him to move to that position. But that was just a name that Rhule had mentioned potentially shuffling. Then early on in the show, DB gave some names on the list too, and Harburg was on that list.
Bullock, Harbaugh, Harbaugh, and Booker Jr.
Booker Jr., all guys that could have possibly a new role or maybe a more unique role on this team. Do you like the idea that Coach Rhule is all about shifting guys around to kind of fill a need versus, hey, you got recruited for this position and this is where you're going to stay?
Well, he kind of talked about that, where if they see a shift in position, they do it because they see, like, we see a future for you here, or we've come from coaching in the NFL. If you want to get to the NFL, we think you'd fit well here. And Rhule said, like, we'll approach them with that. If they don't like that move, they won't push it on them. Sometimes they'll have them try out both positions and practice and see where they fit well, and that works. I mean, Jake was a really good pass catcher at Southeast. I think he could fit in really well at that tight end position. You know?
He grabbed a couple over our head a couple times. I do know that.
And even Heinrich, you know, you look at him and he looks built. Like, and he said that he's open. If a change of position comes for him, he's open to it. But right now he's working at quarterback. So it also speaks to the players and their willingness to listen.
So that's interesting, because Andrew gave me a hypothetical early on about if a coach approaches me on a move versus if a coach approached me on a move and I felt like I had trust in what he was telling me. When Harburg was coming out of high school, I remember segments upon segments, I was like, man, this guy's a really good athlete, and he could easily be a tight end. That's what I said. And I think people are like, oh, no, he can't be – he's a quarterback. And I'm like, I'm not saying he can't be a quarterback. I'm just trying to give you his range, right? Like, I think he could easily be a college tight end. But it takes the fact – and Coach Rhule has said this to me on numerous occasions. I'll let a guy start on whatever he wants – on whatever side of the ball he wants to, because I believe he has to have buy-in. But after that, it's you have to trust me. Do you trust me, and have I built a relationship where you can trust me? I think that's like part of it when you have to get a guy to buy in.
Yeah, and Heinrich, I completely agree. I think Heinrich could fit in well, especially with his body type and size and athleticism. He could be a really unique, dynamic tight end. He could fit in well in that room. And I think hearing him talk a little bit this morning, you get that buy-in. I mean, the coaches, and they have invested so much time and energy already with this player group. There's, you know, 100 some of them, so it's tough to go around with all that attention, but they've got that buy-in from the players, and the guys are competitive. They want to win right away, and this coaching staff, to you know, in the college game, they're pretty good at winning. So I think it's easy to buy in when you see that belief and that attention to detail that they bring.
I brought up all those names in my previous question that DB liked, who he thought could emerge this spring. Guys on my list included Gabe Irvin Jr. and Xavier Betts. In your mind, who's on your list? Who's going to emerge this spring?
Gabe's a good point. He's fast. He's one of the fastest on the team, and Rhule said he's about 222 right now with all that speed, and that's tough. He wants him to be a battering ram after a sensational camp is what he said, and he looks it right now. I could see Xavier Betts being a kind of a game breaker at receiver.
Hey, how about his frame? He looks
DB brought that up.
Listen, Brady, full disclosure, not to go all creepo, but I gave him a hug, and it was like one of those where I was like – it was kind of rubbing
around his back.
I was like, man, you got like muscles, right? He's like 204.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to cock your shoulders back to wrap all the way around him, you know?
he looks good, man.
Yeah, well, and like he looks good, and I think it's interesting to see how he adapts back to college football, because that break, you know, it can be tough on some kids, but he seems to be adapting well. And then you get guys like MJ Sherman, Chief Borders, guys jumping into a unique defense. I think the buy-in is there. Their body frames are good to support it. So look for those guys to make some moves.
And Chief Borders, Tony White said last week, he's kind of has an affinity for him to potentially step up and be a leader. I know MJ Sherman was the guy on my list back when he came over out of the transfer portal, but yeah, watch out for Chief Borders in more ways than none.
He's big, man. He is really big for that size, and he moves well too. And I think that that's kind of what you need in that position.
Brady Oltmans, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much. We'll talk again next week.
Yeah, talk to you guys later.
That is Brady Oltmans on Twitter, just like it sounds, just like it's spelled. That will do it for today's show. Still a lot that we could have gotten into, but we will save it all for tomorrow and later this week. We'll see you then.